Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. Mark Mancola. He is author of The Whole Health Diet, A Transformational Approach to Weight Loss. Americans are avid dieters, with nearly one-third of our entire nation taking up dieting every year. Yet, according to the Food Addiction Institute, diets have a success rate of between 10 and 30%. Dr. Mark Mancola, natural health care practitioner and author of The Whole Health Diet, A Transformational Approach to Weight Loss, claims that this high failure rate is due to a flawed approach to dieting that focuses only on physical changes. What dieters need, Dr. Mancola argues, is a more holistic approach that addresses the root causes of weight gain, our emotional, mental, and spiritual needs. In the Whole Health Diet, Dr. Mancola not only teaches readers how to tackle emotional eating, he shows them how to develop and maintain their own personalized, energy-calibrated nutrition plan, based on the notion that each individual's metabolism reacts differently to various foods. Mark shows dieters how to electromagnetically test themselves for metabolic food intolerances. Mark Mancola is a legendary natural health care practitioner who has transformed the lives of many thousands of people over the past 30 years. Mark has integrated ancient Chinese energy techniques with cutting-edge nutritional science and what has become his innovative electromagnetic muscle testing system, EMT. The main focus of this integrated East-West approach is what he calls acutrition, as it zeroes in on each individual's unique nutritional needs. You can find out more about Mark and his book by visiting his website, which is markmancola.com, and that's markmincolla.com. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. I'd like to welcome Mark to the show. Good day, Mark. Thanks for joining me.
Robert, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. I've read your book, and I'm one of those that, you know, started up the New Year. It's like,
book.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it was really good. You know, what I liked about it was just, it was very easy to read. It was, you know, you have wonderful exercises, and we'll talk about these later, but, you know, assessments and different ways. It was very interactive, and I liked that in a book.
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I'd like to first start off is, you know, if you wouldn't mind telling the listeners, why is it that you, I mean, with dozens and hundreds of diet books out there, why did you write the Whole Health Diet book?
A couple different reasons. First of all, as you pointed out, for the past 33 years, I've been a healthcare problem solver, Robert, from the holistic perspective, the idea that you can't really get much done unless you roll up your sleeves and dig down deep. So the idea of helping people with all sorts of different symptoms and diseases and conditions from a holistic perspective means we're going to take a look at body, mind, and spirit. We're going to look at the whole person and try to see if we can connect the dots in a way that makes sense and produces a better result than just handing them a pharmaceutical prescription. And we decided to take that approach and apply it to weight loss because weight loss is failing miserably, as most of us are aware of. We're talking about 40 million Americans, $50 billion a year, 95% failure within the first year. Diets simply do not work. Why don't they work? They're purely calorie counting projects. they don't go into the body, mind, and spirit. They're sorely lacking in the holistic perspective, and I think that's kind of what's necessary to solve the problem. Therein lies the rub. Well, I decided to write the whole health diet.
Yeah, well, you know, I loved the holistic approach to it. I mean, you know, later on I want to talk about some of the areas that I was surprised to see in the book, you know, some of the homeopathy aspects that you included in the book, which I liked, but it was surprising. So you mentioned that, you know, basically, you know, dieters just can't rely on calorie counting. You know, is there a... have you found that maybe there are some, you know, particular reasons or of the whys maybe behind we have a lot of people overeating?
I think if you take the holistic perspective and kind of put it in reverse, you think about emotions, for example, the idea that so many people are emotionally out of balance. You know, I say emotions are powerful energies, they're volcanic energies stored in the heart. And I see it's really important to kind of think of emotion from a different perspective. We tend to have a very negative and a very dim and a very kind of apprehensive view about our own emotions. Emotions are energies, and they drive our behaviors. I say that, you know, when you think about emotions, when it comes to permanent weight loss, the human heart lies at the heart of the matter, as I always say. Emotional toxicity must be confronted as a stress metabolic response. It produces stress chemistry, which affects the way you burn calories. It kind of offsets some of the balance of your ability to metabolically kind of balance your anabolic response. So emotions change our chemistry. They involve the adrenal glands and many different hormones like adrenaline, noradrenaline, epinephrine, if you will. So many different hormones are affected by stress that drive our eating habits, that actually drive us into addictive behaviors. Emotion is really at the core of a lot of this stuff, and I think we need to kind of take a much deeper view of how emotion kind of plays into the overeating prospect and the addictive prospect. And I would say that your emotional energy must move outward, not downward. So the idea is that people tend to stuff their emotions with foods and drinks, let the emotion kind of settle outward, not inward.
Yeah, I like that. Outward, not downward. That's one that I'm going to remember to be using. Now, I read the idea that, you know, we have fat genes, or, you know, that one might be able to kind of turn off fat genes. Can you talk a little bit about that and
sure.
Why, you know, there's a certain ratio that we should probably be paying attention to?
That's a great part of the whole story, if you will, and I think that the key is we hear so much about genes, you know, fat genes. My father, my grandmother, grandfather were all overweight, so I'm not going to be overweight. That's just the nature of my fate, I guess. That just doesn't cut mustard because Craig Venter, who is the father of the modern human genome, has done arguably more genetic research than anybody on the planet. And back in February of 1991, he wrote a paper entitled "Genetic Determinism Has Been Dead for 25 Years. You only got 30,000 genes. There's just not enough to extrapolate there to blame your genes. So that whole process needs to be thought of in a different way. We now know that because our understanding has expanded with regards to genetic properties, we can turn good genes on, turn bad genes off. You can't change your genes, but 0.1% every 250 generations. But you can change the behavior of a gene in 0.7 seconds with a thought, with a nutrient, the way we behave, the way we think, the way we emotionalize, the way we get our rest, hydrate. Everything we do behaviorally affects the expression of our genes. So we can express healthy genes or express unhealthy genes based on hitting a switch. So we know that there are 26 nutrients, for example, that play a significant role in turning on healthy genes. So I think that's a whole different prospect than we're used to thinking about. But you're right, there's 7 hormones that are responsible for setting up our metabolism, burning our calories with some degree of efficiency, hopefully. And if those 7 hormones are in balance, I call them the Magnificent 7. And if they're in balance, then the prospects are far greater that you're going to burn calories with greater efficiency. So how do those hormones get balanced? How do they get imbalanced? There's a simple answer. It's kind of ironic. It starts where it finishes, which is food. So the way we eat programs these hormones, a lot of starch, you know, what we call comfort foods, a lot of bread, cereal, pasta, rice, cookies, sugars, desserts, treats, and snacks have an affinity for increasing insulin. They require insulin for transport. The more insulin we produce, the more fat we store, and the more we imbalance those seven hormones. So I think the key is you want to increase your amount of proteins and vegetables, and I think that should make a significant difference with regard to balancing out the magnificent seven hormones and increasing the prospect for efficient calorie burning. So what we eat determines how we eat.
Yeah, wow. Now, you know, and you mentioned vegetables. I just kind of want to bring up something real quickly. We're told that, you know, to eat your fruits and vegetables, you know. But in your book, you indicate that, I guess, not every vegetable is created equally when it comes to dieting.
I mean, when you think about the world of energy, food is never thought of as energy. So I think that when you think of food as having different energetic properties, everything is unique. Everything is completely unique unto itself. So, yes, if you think about cruciferous vegetables, we'll just pick on broccoli here for a minute. Broccoli is a powerful vitamin A-rich, fiber-rich cruciferin vegetable with a lot of antioxidants and so many beautiful, healthy properties. People used to think of broccoli as a perfect food, if you will, or one of the perfect foods. But broccoli has these pro-goitrins, which are chemistries that say, look, if you eat your broccoli at the salad bar in a raw state, without steaming it or cooking it, the goitrins that are in the broccoli will actually shut off your thyroid's absorption of iodine and really run the risk of slowing down your thyroid metabolism and increase your risk of gaining weight and maintaining a higher weight balance and not burning calories with as much efficiency. So actually, let's say that broccoli, when it's steamed for 6 or 8 minutes, will make a big difference in improving your metabolism versus raw, which will actually slow down your metabolism. So there are many vegetables that are producing these pro-goitrins, these blocking agents, these agents that block the thyroid's absorption of iodine. We got to guard against that just by making sure that we lightly steam our broccoli.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, because we've been spoon-fed, you know, the idea that, you know, raw is better and vegetables are better. And so, I mean, it's a re-education that we really need to employ in order to kind of make the best out of the food that we eat.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I think the key to writing the whole health diet was to actually educate people, elucidate them, inspire them, to bring them into realms of awareness about calories not being necessarily equal here, and understand the nuances and the energy-based principles regarding food to give the reader a more distinct advantage.
Yeah, very much. Now, would you, I believe you use the phrase energy dieting, or it's used, can you maybe explain to the listeners what that entails?
Sure. One of the things I like to emphasize is that I have a system called the electromagnetic muscle testing system, which you spoke of in the introduction. And the idea begins with the understanding that everything is energy. In fact, the book that I wrote prior to the Whole Health Diet was the Whole Health book. So the Whole Health book and the Whole Health Diet book both talk from a perspective of everything being energy. And back in 1921, Albert Einstein won the Nobel Prize for E equals MC squared, which basically translates as energy and matter are interconvertible and transferable. Otherwise, nutrition is all about, in my nutritional perspective, is all about understanding and teaching that food is energy, people are energy, and the two, every time they meet up, they're producing an energy reaction. It's either positive or negative. So every time you're eating broccoli, like we talked about, or potatoes or green beans or apples or pears, whatever food you're eating has an energetic property to it, so too do you. And like being at a party with 50 people, you're not going to get along energetically with everybody there. So mm-hmm. some relationships will work better than others. So we have a system called the electromagnetic muscle testing system. It teaches the reader how to basically test energetically, test themselves with a loved one. The two people kind of work together, home in the kitchen, at doing some muscle testing techniques that enable them to determine the foods that are energetically aligned and balanced for them versus the foods that are not. I just had a woman come in yesterday in my office. She said, you know something, every time I ate the green beans, I noticed my weight went up. So, I mean, typically that's not a typical situation because people need to understand that green beans are generally a pretty good low-calorie, stimulating food for the thyroid, an optimal food for calorie burning. In her case, it was not. It's not a one-size-fits-all proposition. So I said, let's test you for thyroid. I tested her out for her thyroid for her green bean exposure. Very, very negative. So the key here is if you're eating a food that generically is considered a really good dietary nutritional food, but you test it with our techniques and find out that it's energetically negative for your body, you need to stay away from those foods. So it helps the reader to understand how to specifically individualize their food response, to create a food map, to determine which foods are best, which foods are not the best, and helping you to burn calories.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that's the one thing. I mean, everyone, like you say, everyone's system is different, you know, and it's...
We are all very unique universes unto ourselves. The key is you want to energetically understand your constitutional nature and how foods work for you or against you. Again, we think of foods. I went on Dr. Oz last year, and I was really struck by how generic the information was. Everybody's saying that, you know, blueberries and walnuts are good for everybody. And they may be good on paper because of their nutrients, their fiber and all that stuff, but energetically speaking, they may not work out for everybody. So I think that we were trying to give people a different perspective on how to energetically test themselves and to tap into the map that shows what their energetic cooperative foods are, the foods that energetically work best for them versus the foods that don't. I think there's a whole different kind of way to appraise your food and to maximize and optimize your weight loss possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when some people, when they diet, they experience, you know, bloating and, you know, still have that look, yet maybe losing weight. So would you kind of share with the listeners, you know, what may be the cause for that kind of reaction?
Sure. I wrote about that extensively in the Whole Health Diet because I think, you know, one of the most important points I can think of about dieting, how frustrating is it to lose 20, 30, 40 pounds or 50 or whatever, to lose a tremendous amount of weight and yet still look like you're overweight? And I think bloating and belly fat tend to kind of create this image that you're not getting the job done. Even though you know that you've worked hard, you put in your blood, sweat, and tears, you've lost an appreciable amount of weight, but it just doesn't look like it. How frustrating is that? So the key here is there are a lot of different fermented foods like vinegars, yeast and breads, you know, yeasted breads, marinated foods, beer, wine, champagne. Again, what we call fermented foods, sauerkraut, kimchi, whatever. So the key here is these are fermented foods that produce gases in the intestines. They produce pyruvic acid, lactic acid, carbonic acid, ammonia, acetic acid. These are going to create a lot of bloating in the belly. So the key here is you don't want to be bloating and losing weight at the same time, because once again, you're losing a ton of weight. You want the benefit of looking good as well as, you know, feeling good. And the key here is you want to keep that fermentation to a dull roar, because it'll produce a lot of gases in the belly that make you bloat and make it look like you're still as heavy as you ever were. Kind of a frustrating scenario.
No, it is, you know, because, I mean, we're a little bit vain, you know, in the sense that, I mean, you know, our
ideas. Oh, no, don't about it. Hey, you're working hard. You want it to show.
Exactly. So, well, that's good to know, because, you know, I think, you know, by placing our attention on, you know, those fermented products, then that will help. You know, people maybe not have that bloated look and actually be able to see the results of their efforts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, in dieting, is there a place to use, like, affirmations to be able to shift the mindset toward, you know, a healthier diet?
Of course. You know, when you think about the word mantra means word of power. And mantras have been used for centuries by every civilization on the planet to build up the mind, to strengthen the mind, to go into combat, to go into task. And there's no question about the fact that there's some substance of value there, because we've engaged in a new science here in our world called neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity says we're not hardwired in the brain. The brain is actually not hardwired, but it's neuroplastic, which means it's designed for change. And it'll change into whatever kind of repetition and rehearsal you expose it to. If you want to be positive, you utter positive thoughts, positive words. If you want it to be negative, you can do the same thing with negativity as well. So the brain is very, very shapeable, very malleable, very reformatable. So the key here is that Dr. Richard Davidson from the University of Wisconsin is one of the great leading neuroplasticity researchers who came up with this term. I love the term he uses. He says, your words produce a matching neural chemistry. Your words, not your thoughts, your deeds, not your history, not your future. Your words alone produce a matching chemistry. We tell people it doesn't even matter the nature of your words. If you're just saying positive things with repetition, again, the other term that he uses is he says it's very important to rehearse over and over and over and over and over. And so we've determined there's a number of different studies that show that when you engage in a positive mantra, such as I'm the master of the universe, I'm a genius, I'm wonderful, I love life, whatever, any positive phrases like that, uttered for 4 minutes twice a day for 16 weeks, will tend to shift your brain chemistry from negative to positive. To shift your brain dominance from right prefrontal cortex, which is the Woody Allen brain, to the left prefrontal cortex, which is the Tony Robbins brain. So we can actually, you know, reformat our brains in a way to work hand in hand with our weight loss efforts.
Well, I like that. Boy, you have a great way of putting things, to be able to bring home the imagery. That's great. I like that. One of the things, you know, I mentioned in the beginning that, you know, your book contains, you know, assessment examples and recipes and that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. You know, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to talk just about one to give the listeners a good idea. And the one that I really liked was the whole health diet, the metabolic questionnaire. You know, and you basically go through the questions and then determine what kind of oxidizer you are. So I would love if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners.
How efficient you are burning calories.
Exactly, yeah. If you wouldn't mind sharing, I think that would give the listeners a really good idea of you know, what's contained in your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we're all aware of the fact that there are people, there's, you know, running jokes abound about the fact that there's some people that gain weight just looking at food. Then there's all those folks that we know that just eat and eat and eat and don't seem to gain weight no matter how much they eat. So there's actually, like, you know, three different major metabolic types. So you think of somebody who is more ectomorphic, endomorphic, or mesomorphic. And mesomorphic is representative of kind of an athletic build, kind of a medium metabolizer, you know, fit and strong on the muscle side. And you got ectomorphs that are thin, the kind of people that just can eat and eat and eat all day long and never seem to gain weight no matter how much they eat. And there's endomorphs that basically look at food and gain weight. So these are the three basic categories. So we've essentially, you know, constructed a questionnaire that's sort of wrapped around the notion of the same three categories to help the reader decide which category they fall in, to help them better understand, you know, the quandary of why the neighbor can lose weight eating the same thing that they're eating and they're gaining weight. So there's that great frustration of not understanding that not everybody's created equal, as you said a minute ago. It's not a one-size-fits-all proposition. Everybody's metabolically born and with different capabilities of burning calories, different rates of metabolism. So the questionnaire is basically designed around that to help the reader to kind of close in on that understanding. So when people's temperatures run, you know, kind of slow, you know, I ask them about their body temperature, and one of the questionnaires, another is if your body temperature tends to run low chronically, that means your metabolic system is kind of low. It's kind of more of an ectomorphic metabolism. You're going to have to work extra hard in losing weight. Whereas the person who tends to run on the hot side, I don't mean hot flashes hormonally, I mean people that
right.
historically
right.
have a constitutionality that tends to run on the warm side. They heat up quickly, they sweat, they perspire quickly, et cetera. Those are people who are more inclined to lose weight more easily. And then you got different categories of temperatures that we list. We talk about different rates of heat, body coolness. We talk about different rates of heart rate. You know, heart rates that are higher tend to have a tendency to be more ectomorphic and more ability to burn calories more efficiently. People have slower heart rates, lower metabolism. I think these stem around the concept that there's two different types of metabolism. There's anabolic and there's catabolic. Anabolic is kind of a well-muscled, well-fit, easy-to-burn calories, strong, healthy, vibrant metabolism. That's anabolic. Catabolic is different. Catabolic is more about wear and tear. It's kind of like you're burning yourself to pieces. You know, your efficiency's out the door. You got a little layer of fat around the belt buckle, I should say, yet you don't have a firm, strong metabolic response. So these are different types of metabolism that are supported by different types of nutritional programs. So I think the bottom line takeaway is people that are endomorphic, they tend to gain weight easily, need to be very careful. I say endomorphs need to cut out their starch eating. I even have endomorphic patients, never let them eat potatoes or rice. They just eat vegetables and lean proteins, like lean meats, lean vegetables, low-starch vegetables like greens, pretty much all day long, low-sugar fruits as opposed to high-sugar fruits, things like apples, berries as opposed to bananas and raisins. And I think you just have to adapt the diet to whatever your calculations are all about, to whatever your constitutional calculations are all about. If you burn calories easy, don't worry about it. Have a banana. It's going to vary from person to person.
Very much. Well, we're going to take just a quick break, about a 90-second break here in a moment. And I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Mark any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Mark, feel free to type it in and we will get to that. Okay, Mark, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to do a little tease. I want to talk about the art of cheating. And the 85% rule.
You got it.
And then transform action. Those are two great topics I want to talk about next, okay?
Sure.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Dr. Mark Mincola, and we're talking about his new book, The Whole Health Diet, A Transformational Approach to Weight Loss. Again, you can find out more about this book and his many other books. He's got quite a number of books. You can find out about them. He has got videos and articles and many other resources on his website, which is www.markmincola.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back. Mark?
Great to be back.
Great, thanks. Okay, so Art of Cheating. I thought, boy, I want to read about this one. So would you mind?
I'd love
for you to share. Sure.
I think, paradoxically, it's probably the most important message in the entire book. It's paradoxically, people never think in terms of cutting corners or cheating, especially we who are of the American brand. You know, we tend to think in terms of succeeding being 100% required of our attention, and I think that the quickest way to hit zero in a car is to go 120. So I think, I always use the analogy of the man on the bicycle who's pedaling as fast as he can going uphill. He's going to be the first guy to fall over and crash. So I think, when you adhere to a diet at 85 or 90%, I think you're far better off to think of it as a marathon. You need to be able to expand and contract. You don't just inhale, you have to exhale as well. So the idea of hitting the diet at 100% is like comparable to just inhaling as many times as you can and just hoping that you don't croak. So the objective here with diet is to make sure that you have an organized way to cheat, to make sure that you've built your cheating plan into your overall plan, to make sure that you're holding your feet to the fire 6 days a week, that you take one night, maybe a Friday or Saturday night with the people you love, and spending some social time over a table and eating pretty much what you want to eat without completely crashing your program and without abusing your body. I think, you know, you can just think of having fun at a meal or two, one or two nights a week, and trying to hold the rest of your plan intact. So you're building it in with consciousness, with mindfulness, with intent to basically feed your spirit once in a while, just to kind of like let the pressure out, to exhale, as I like to say, and I think to kind of balance out your overall approach. That to me is much more holistic than the seeming approach to just, you know, being 100% rigid about the thing and just kind of setting yourself up for a crash. You know, I learned early on in my 33 years of work that, you know, that if you set somebody up for perfection, they're going to be the first one to hit the wall and they'll never get back on the merry-go-round.
Yeah. You know, and it seems that, you know, if you build in this, you know, 15%, you know, wiggle room, you know, this little, you know, exhale for you know, not to use, you know, it seems then we're going to be less likely to view, you know, our attempts as failure, you know, or kind of going off, off the plan. I mean, it really does take the pressure off, you know, as far as,
you know you're actually
having
right, Robin. There's another interesting perspective with that as well. That's absolutely correct. But the other part that's kind of fascinating is I've found over the years in tens of thousands of appointments that when you get a patient to follow a program fairly enthusiastically for a while, they go through a little bit of a detox. They clean up their diet, they clean up their intent, they get their program pretty well aligned, and they're sticking to their guns. Their body's going to clean out. It's going to do a little bit of detox. You're going to feel better in ways that you didn't expect. Maybe, you know, you sleep better, your bowels work better, your energy's better, your concentration's better. You notice some improvements because by nature of the fact that you're cleaning out your chemistry. You do that for a week, and you cheat on the Saturday night because our program says you're allowed to do that. You'll have fun. You'll have a blast with the people you love, enjoying food you enjoy. Then what happens the next morning is you have more of a food hangover. The food hangover is more acute because of the detox you've already been through. So many people say, you know, and I'm actually excited to get back on the program come Sunday or Monday morning. That's another interesting perspective.
Yeah, I know someone who has very much had that experience, you know, where she has, she found several areas of food that weren't working for her, and eliminated that from her diet. And on the occasion when maybe something slips in, you know, she her body immediately has that adverse reaction, and it just reinforces the fact that, you know, what
really
I was
does.
Doing was right.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly correct. So I say that before you start a program of detoxing and eating healthy and really cleaning up your diet and eating nutritionally sound food, before that happens, you tend to experience your symptoms in a chronic sort of manner. So you have these kind of chronic, mundane, day-to-day symptoms that have almost become a norm. You almost become used to them, but they're in a chronic sort of nature. Then after you do a little cleaning, a little detoxing, eating healthily, that gets cleaned up. And if you cheat, even to have fun, like we said in our 15% rule, we cut a corner on a Saturday with the people you love, it shifts over into more of an acute phase. The symptoms become more acute, more of a sharp, acute kind of overnight food hangover. But it clears quickly, too. It moves fast. It moves in more intensively, and it moves out more quickly. So you go from chronic to acute. It's quite a shift.
Yeah, very much. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about, there were two areas in your book that dealt with more of like a homeopathic contribution to the dieting process, and they were with the Bach flower essences and with essential oils. I would love if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners just how those particular, I guess, modalities or elements would contribute to helping someone have a healthier diet plan.
Sure. Well, once again, we're trying to basically holistically give the reader every possible perspective from the standpoint of natural medicine, give them every possible advantage to being successful in weight loss. So you're mentioning energy medicines, and again, one of the first statements we make in all my books is everything is energy, which is true, and I think as a culture, we're slowly awakening to that fact and slowly beginning to embrace that notion to the point where we're starting to accept protocols and different means of exercises and systems that can actually bring greater success to a variety of different possibilities in life through energy therapies. So Bach flower remedies are basically, you know, really important homeopathic medicines that work at a very subtle energetic level. You take something, for example, like cherry plum. Cherry plum is a Bach flower remedy that's actually for panic. So, I mean, if somebody's really panic-stricken about you know, their particular brand of stress, they tend to move into panic very easily. They tend to move into fight or flight, highly stress-reactive, very, very acutely responsive to possibility of fear and panic attacks and that sort of anxiety, that sort of thing. Cherry plum might be very helpful. Again, you know, when you think about the kind of things that sabotage a diet, emotions, like we said earlier, panic, anxiety, mm-hmm. fear, sadness. Again, there's another Bach flower remedy called Gorse, G-O-R-S-E. And Gorse is actually very much indicated for grief, sadness, any kind of deep sadness from loss or from parting or whatever. And again, these are the kind of things, these are the kind of emotions, grief, panic, these are the type of things that tend to sabotage people's behaviors, break them out of their consistency patterns, challenge their consistency as far as, you know, proper eating and all that stuff. So where emotions are so inclined to kind of throw us off our game, these energy medicines may be very supportive, very helpful from the perspective that they support us. Essences are the same thing, you know, different flower essences, different, you know, powerful. I mean, think about some of the things we've used in the past in our world against stress. Lavender is a good example. Lavender oil is a great oil. And lavender oil is, of course, something that helps you sleep, helps you relax, helps offset your stress, again, your panic, your anxiety. And lavender can be an essential oil that's super helpful at alleviating emotional energies that throw us off our game as well. So they're brilliant medicines. Yeah. Energy medicines are safe, no side effects. And, again, they're simple ways to support your spirit, your nervous system, to help you kind of stick on that diet.
Yeah, as you know, it was actually a friend of mine who was talking about lavender oil, and she basically put some on a cotton ball and put it in her pillow to help it with sleep. I did that, and I was amazed at the.
It's incredible.
The, I was shocked, and I mean that got me sold, you know, just looking into and exploring, you know, the at least the essential. Well, I haven't done the flower essences, but the essential oil.
We talk in the book too about how there have been studies that indicate just how this happens, why this is truly happening, why it's successful, the biochemistry of it, how it affects the pineal gland, how it affects the adrenal glands, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there's great studies about how these oils, these essential oils and these essences affect the nervous system, affect the brain. There's actually remarkable studies about that. So these are for real medicines. Again,
yeah,
safe,
well, you know,
side effect free.
Yeah. Yeah, the you mentioned in the book there was one study you mentioned about peppermint and how, you know, people, how it basically led people to, you know, consume fewer calories, and I loved that as soon as I read that, because 2 days ago I had just got my first order of peppermint oil. It's like, yay.
Perfect.
Like,
timing.
It was. I thought, this is perfect. You know, it's unfolding as it should. So, but yeah. So anyway, those. Yeah, you know, and to me, it's kind of like in your book you employ so many different tools that people can use. You know, so it's like you can kind of create a la carte your particular plan.
Well, and it's fun to kind of just continue to work with these and give them the road tests and see how they function. One interesting point that I might bring up, too, is you probably remember the study that I mentioned by Dr. Carrie Morwidge. Carrie Morwidge did an interesting study. She had 300, it's a university study that found 300 volunteers lost 56% more weight by imagining that they were overeating food. Did you see that?
Yes.
There's a part of the brain called the nucleus accumbens, and that's actually the addiction center in the brain, the nucleus accumbens. And there's other parts of the brain that actually work with that. It's determining what our craving factors are, what our addiction factors are. And actually there's a part of the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex, which is part of the brain that activates the nervous system and nerve transmission based on imagination. So they've shown that you can actually produce the same neural chemistry by imagining you're doing something as opposed to doing it. So actually dieting can be actually imagined, or actually in this case, imagine that you're overeating something, produces the same biochemistry in the brain, the same neural chemistry in the brain, as actually overeating. And it actually lowers your drive and your tendency to take in calories. And they prove that, and they prove it in the study that a majority said 56% of those folks in that study cut their calorie eating dramatically by imagining that they're overeating food, using your brain to your advantage.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Now, this is a great transition because I want to talk a little bit about you have, toward the end of the book, you have what you call an 8-step transform action plan. So, of course, that,
anybody
love that
who
word.
Likes my book, who reads my book, knows that I love to coin phrases. I love to play with words. So action is the word that I like to use. And actually, it's just like it sounds. It's a transformational action-packed approach to getting change happening in your life. So it's transformative. And we said, number one, you want to create a sacred place in which to manifest your miracle. So number one, you need to create a sacred place, a place where you know you're not going to get disturbed by anybody, a place where the world doesn't creep in on you. Everybody's constantly, you know, bothered these days by cell phone calls, by tasks, by responsibilities, and the doorbell's always ringing, the phone's always ringing, et cetera, et cetera. You're not going to get much done if that's your entire life. So you need to take at least a certain period of time out in every day and create a space for yourself, a place, a sacred place, that doesn't entertain that kind of noise and that kind of distraction in your life. So you create that magical place where you can actually plan on getting your miracles to take place for you. That's the first transform action plan. You know, I think it's really important to kind of create an environment that is a success-based support system place for your environment to actually support your miracle productions. That's number one. Number two is one of my favorites is actually the idea that beyond finding an environment, there's also a process where you take a walk back. That's go to the end and walk back to where you are is what I refer to. The idea that you want to have a vision in your mind about what your success looks like. So if you want to lose 100 pounds and close your eyes in your sacred place where you make your miracles happen, start making them happen in your mind. Start having them seed themselves, kind of germinate, if you will, in your thought process. That you envision whatever your success is, you picture it in your mind and the end, the final step. My theory is you can't take your next step until you know what your last step looks like. Most people are stuck. They're stuck in the mud trying to take the next step. They spend an entire life, in many cases, stuck on the next step. I say that's because you haven't envisioned the last step. So your last step sort of defines your entire mission. It defines your miracle. It kind of gives form to it. So your next step is actually supportive of your last step. So that's really an important part of the equation. Anyway, there's eight of those steps.
Yeah, I was going to say the first two steps you say they're like energy based. Those are that's where the focus is. And you know, as far as the visualization of going to the end and walking backwards, I have never heard that kind of approach. I've been doing this for like 5 years, and I've had a lot of folks talk about visualization. But what I loved about that one is that because most often we're kind of focused on, this is where we want to go, and then we kind of flash back to, okay, here's where we are, what do we need to do next to get there?
When you've seen 60,000 appointments over 33 years, you've had a lot of time to work stuff out. And one of the things that I have a vivid recollection of over the 33 years that I've been doing this work is the number of people that come in to me that are stuck. And it's just incredible. There's just an astounding number of patients that are complaining of a variety of different ailments and weight gain and all kinds of different maladies and problems. And I always sit with them and they always say, look, I'm stuck. I can't seem to get beyond where I am. And then I ask this simple question comes up. Where do you want to go? What does it look like? I don't know. Nobody knows. 95% of the people that have asked that question to are clueless. They draw a blank expression. They have no idea how to explain where they want to go, where they want to end up. I said, look, you need to start off by knowing where you want to end up and what it looks like. Furthermore, you need to detail everything you can about it. You need to detail where you live, who you're around, who you're surrounded by. The greater details, the better your mind actually starts to manifest, because creation happens in a manifest form. And you can't make anything happen until you can envision what it is that you want. So it starts from the perspective of getting great detail, color, shape, size, dimension, every concept that you can add to it, the better. So the idea is you need to clarify what that final stanza, that final chapter, that final picture, the final goal is. Then you immediately find them get unstuck. So I've seen thousands of people get unstuck that way.
Yeah, yeah, they, you know, I particularly paid attention to that, you know, those, I guess it was called submodalities, was that correct?
Yes,
is that,
that's exactly correct.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, kind of basically giving depth, you know, to that visualization. And you know, to me, it the end result is creating very much an emotional attachment to that result.
That's exactly right. I think the important part of that is before you can take your giant steps, which is one of the things we talk about doing in the Transform Action Stanza, giant steps are really important. I think that you got to set up the structure of where you're taking those giant steps and what you're taking them toward. The idea of coming from the back end forward, you know, defining your end goal first, really sets you up for a way you can actually be completely free to just race to that finish line. You know, it's kind of like, you know, anybody's ever run a marathon. I used to run marathons. I'm in my 60s now, but back in my 30s, I used to run marathons quite extensively. And it's kind of like you run 26 miles, and it's sort of like there are places within that 26 miles you feel like croaking, you feel like giving up, you feel like just completely getting frustrated with this whole process. I'm giving up. This is a pain in the neck. Why did I ever do this? And then suddenly at one point you see the finish line. When you see the finish line, everything's forgotten. You just run as fast as you can to get to that finish line. So in a sense, what you're doing with this recommended process is you're defining and clarifying and creating a picture of your finish line, which frees you up to make a race for that last stanza, that finish. You can race to the end.
Yeah, you know, and you know, in addition, the taking the three giant steps was like the third of the eight. Your fourth one seems to be an oxymoron in a way: fail to succeed. You know, so I think that that gets people wondering exactly, you know, what do you mean by fail to succeed?
The simplest way to summarize the fail to succeed part of it is there's been a term that's been used for many years that says something like the road to success is paved with failures. So I think people tend to, you know, I always look at the Tai Chi circle, and I say that the Tai Chi circle is this perfect balance, you know, the yin-yang sign, as many people call it. It represents this perfect balance between dark and light. I think we come from a culture that says, look, let's accentuate the light, forget about the dark, and just extricate it from possibility. And I say that's dead wrong. You need to embrace your dark side. You need to understand that it's part of what makes you whole. If you could take all the darkness out of your life, you could take all the negativity out of your life, you'd fail to be whole. You can't just be all light. So the key here is, I think, you know, your failures are not a bad thing. Don't give up. People tend to encounter failure more than once, and they say, that's it, I'm giving up, this is a waste of time. It's really important not to have that attitude, but to understand and appreciate philosophically that your darkness and your light are no different. They're actually one part of two different sides of one whole circle. And the objective is to embrace your failures as lessons, as possibilities for enabling you to better succeed. So it's kind of, that's what that intention is in that section of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we're not going to go through all of them so people can buy the book to get them all, but I do want to mention that the eighth one, you know, affirm that you are a maker of miracles. Because to me, this is one of those that kind of adds that sense of inspiration. But during that particular section, what I found astounding was the mention that we have anywhere from like 1,000 to 3,000 thoughts per minute, and that they come from like all different aspects of consciousness. And so can you talk a little bit, because it seems like a great majority of them come from our negative unconscious, which might
That's
seem
exactly
to be
right. So, you know, when you think about the way the bits of information is important, our conscious mind, like when somebody says in December 31st, I'm going to engage in my new diet on January 1st, and this is going to be the big one, this is going to be the year. That's your conscious mind making a conscious intention, expressing a conscious intention, which is powerful, and it's powerful enough that that part of your mind actually produces 2,000 bits of information per second, can process 2,000 bits of information per second, which is really impressive. But what's even more impressive, your unconscious mind produces 400 billion thoughts, bits of information per second. So the part of you that isn't conscious needs to be. The part of you that's not fully conscious all the time can be your untapped your untapped unlimited potential. Can be seen as your untapped unlimited potential. I refer to that as two different possibilities. You're either unconscious at a level that is just potential, I say. A good way to put it is pure potential. But potential is wonderful, mm-hmm. but it's not expressed. When you have a superconscious mind, the superconscious mind is when you tap into your unconscious potential and take control of it and express it as part of your force, part of your success orientation. So you can take that remarkable possibility of your mind and actually direct it consciously. And the whole buzzword is the conscious. In other words, to take your conscious mind, to marry it and blend it with your unconscious mind, and you're unstoppable at that point. I think that's the key. You want to merge the two into your Tai Chi circle, if you will, and to consciously take hold of the possibilities and the limitless possibilities, I should say, of your unconscious, powerful mind.
Yeah. Just a question. Now, with such a powerful unconscious mind, and the fact that a lot of that negative unconscious is there, in order to give that an upgrade, to be able to kind of tap into that potential, is it necessary to bring those unconscious negative thoughts, beliefs, actions, whatever it is those transactions going on, to bring them into the conscious and shift them, and then keep doing it to the point that it becomes then an unconscious, we upgrade it and then put it back into the unconscious, so that it's a matter of habit now that we're drawing from a positive unconscious. Our conscious is kind of reacting more positively than negative.
Well, it really goes back to what we talked about a few moments back when we talked about the idea that there are mantras or words of
mm-hmm.
power. Again,
mm-hmm.
it only takes words. It doesn't take anything beyond words. And again, to have mantras like I am a genius, which Dr. I can't think of his name right now, the guy who wrote Power versus Force, Dr. David Hawkins, in his books, he talks about all the different phrases that were tested to be the most powerful phrases, energetically, neurologically. The words "I am a genius" came up with the highest value, because nobody ever says that. Nobody ever thinks them. Who thinks of themselves? I mean, even Einstein didn't think of himself as a genius. We tend to think less of ourselves than is true. So I think
mm-hmm.
when you say stuff like "I am a genius," you're uttering words of power or mantras that actually have the effect of changing your neural chemistry. So again, you're rewiring yourself. As I said earlier, it takes 4 minutes twice a day for 16 weeks to rewire from right prefrontal Woody Allen brain to left prefrontal Tony Robbins brain. So all it takes is a focus on the positive, and it happens all by itself.
Good. Well, let the rewiring begin.
Absolutely. Well, don't let it ever stop.
Exactly. Well, we're down toward the end of the show here, Mark, but I do want to ask if the readers, people listening right now and readers of the book were to kind of make one change starting today that would kind of help them get on this particular path, what would that be?
I'm going to give them two.
Okay,
number one is reduce your starch consumption. Again, what is starch? Starch is part of the diet that actually is what we call comfort food. Breads, doughy foods, rice, pasta, those kind of products. Cereals, bagels. You restrict them, potatoes, sweet potatoes. You restrict those comfort foods, those starches, to one serving per day. And pretty much unlimited servings of green vegetables and low-sugar fruits like berries and apples and apricots and grapefruits and things like that. So you can actually accentuate the intake of lean proteins like chicken, turkey, fish, beans, tofu if you're not sensitive to soy, and low-starch vegetables and low-sugar fruits. So increase those consumptions. Hold your starch down to one serving. That's number one. Number two, to actually take your 4 minutes twice a day and utter your positive reformatting or mantra exercises. I think that's key because, again, if you're holding back the starches from your diet, you're not producing as much insulin. Your calorie burning is infinitely more productive, more efficient. Number two, if you're actually operating from your source, higher conscious source, you can't lose in anything. Again, I always say that the human being is much more self-regulated when they're conscious. If you're conscious, you won't need me. You won't need any books. You basically self-regulate.
That's great. Well, Mark, I do want to let listeners know that you are on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm following you on both, so I just invite everyone else who uses those platforms to follow you as well and look at the wonderful posts that you have. And I want to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed
our chat. You make it a very fun project. I appreciate your great approach to doing interviews.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I look forward to following your journey. And I'm sure there will be more books to follow. I mean, you are a very well-written man there, looking at all that you have. So I have to catch up on my books there. But thank you very much for
your
time.
Thank you. My very best to your audience, too. I appreciate the listening.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Mark Minkola, author of The Whole Health Diet, A Transformational Approach to Weight Loss. And again, you can find out more about this particular book, as well as his many other books, his videos, articles, and blog. All of that is available on his website, which is www.markminkola.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website on the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.